Up next, from the Podcast and Portable Media Expo in September 2006 in Ontario, California, it's a presentation by Rick Clow, How to Create and Optimize Your RSS Feed for Maximum Effectiveness, from the Gigavox Media Network.
This is Michael Gohagan from Gigavox Media. And today I'm pleased to bring you another presentation from the Podcast and Portable Media Expo here on the Podcast Academy channel. This audio program is brought to you by Gigavox Media, the exclusive audio content partner of the Podcast and Portable Media Expo. For information on future Podcast and Portable Media Expo events, please visit podcastexpo.com. And now, here's our presentation from the Podcast and Portable Media Expo.
My name is Rick Clow. I run the publisher services team at FeedBurner. Generically, we call me the VP of Business Development. FeedBurner is a company. I'll talk a little bit about us. As I mentioned in the kind of pre-intro there, I'm not here to give a FeedBurner sales pitch. This isn't one of those write a check so you can get up on stage and lock the doors and not let anybody out until they've bought something from you. We manage feeds for a ton of podcasters. We currently manage close to 70,000 podcast feeds in total. That's more feeds than are currently indexed in the iTunes library, to give you a sense of the scope. Now, not all the feeds that we manage are feeds that are necessarily intended for wide distribution. Some of them have one or two subscribers. But we are certainly someone who cares quite a bit about the podcasting market in general and making sure that you get the most out of the podcasting community. While we would love for you to use our services, we're here not to ensure that that happens, but more to ensure that when you leave, you've got a better sense of what it means to have a podcast, what it means to do it well, and hopefully share some ideas or some things that we've observed in managing so many podcasts about things that we've seen done well or potentially done not so well. So to get started here, let's talk about a few things that I think are important when we talk about podcasting. The first one is that iTunes is not the beginning and end of podcasting. And I say that I own an iPod. I swear by it. I love the changes in iTunes 7. I spent pretty much my entire flight this morning from Chicago watching or listening to my iPod. I'm friends with the guys from Apple. So I say that not as a, you know, hey, Apple doesn't own this market. I say it because I think in a lot of cases people see them as synonymous and as a result think a little bit more narrowly than they should about what it means to be a podcaster and what it means to be producing content for a podcasting audience. I think it is interesting to note, right, we manage, as I mentioned, almost 70,000 podcast feeds. I was very surprised the last time we did a survey of all of our podcast feeds that while iTunes is certainly the largest podcasting application consuming feeds, they're almost 60% of the market, the next four are not dedicated podcatching applications. And that's applications or services like MyYahoo, NewsGator, blog lines, and some other web-based services that are thrown in there. So dedicated podcatching applications like Juice is one that's quite popular. Democracy TV is another. While they are popular with a core audience for the mass market, do not represent the majority of your audience, of your listeners or of your viewers. So that's an important thing when you think about who's actually receiving this content to keep in mind which applications they're using. We say here metadata, that's just a fancy word for the code that you insert to describe your content, right? The question was asked of me in our intro, how to get your iTunes categories well received by the iTunes Music Store. That's in part keyed off of the metadata that gets inserted into your feed, but there are other categories of metadata that can be included in a podcasting feed, and we'll talk about those as well. I changed this. This actually used to say the subscription process sucks. I don't know that blows is any more appropriate or inappropriate. At the end of the day, it is not a user-friendly process today for your listeners or your viewers to understand what it means to subscribe. Okay? When I get into talking about downloads, we'll talk about the fact that most of our podcasters see a 2-to-1 ratio of downloads to subscribers. Now, if you ask me, what makes a podcast is the fact that it is subscribable. It is something that I can have iTunes automatically download the audio or video that I care about. But the fact of the matter is, for every one subscriber that you have, you likely have someone else who's coming to your website and clicking a play button or clicking a link, because they don't get that they can have something do it automatically for them. Well, maybe they don't want to, but in a lot of cases, they just don't know any better. And the reason for that, I would argue, is that the subscription process currently is fundamentally broken, something that we're hoping to help solve, but we're not the only answer in this process. You have some responsibility there as well. I'll talk about what ping means a little bit later. Advertising was raised as potentially relevant to this audience. I would suggest that most who are producing a podcast certainly want to think about how to make some money, at least underwrite the costs associated with either the equipment or the cost of hosting, if not making money to actually make a living. So let me just real quickly give you an idea of who we are and why it's relevant that we would be the ones giving this presentation. FeedBurner today manages over 400,000 feeds. For us, a feed is any RSS or ATOM file, but podcasts in there are almost 70,000 of those 400,000. So well over, it's about 15% of all feeds running through FeedBurner today are audio or video feeds. Aggregate subscribers to all of those feeds as of the end of last month is just under 5 million. You can see that these numbers are growing quite a bit. If anybody knows why from January to February those numbers went up so dramatically, I still haven't figured that out. It was not any one particular podcast. It was organic across the board. It's just tremendous growth from January to February. If it was December to January, I would have said it was all the iPods people got for Christmas. Yeah, and maybe that's it. Maybe it's you know, but yeah. And these numbers continue to go up. This is a reflection both of organic growth. We add almost 1,500 feeds a day at feedburner.com. So as we get new feeds running through the system, we get their subscribers coming on board. But it's also you who are currently using us who are seeing your audiences grow organically. So you may have had 100 subscribers last month, you might have 120 this month, you might have 150 next month, and so on. I thought this would be interesting to share, since there's really no objective measure of what podcasts are out there, right? You can certainly see the iTunes directory and see the raw number that are in there, but as I said, that's not necessarily completely representative of the entire podcasting market. At the end of the day, there's no one category that dominates this. The largest category is music, and that's 13%. That's not a dramatic, that's not dominance, right? And you go on down on the list, and it's all over the map. This next one, I thought it's really interesting to see that we have some podcast subscribers from the Holy See, the Vatican. That may be just to the Catholic Insider, a popular podcast. But we have subscribers to podcasts from 185 countries. This is not a U.S.-only phenomenon by any stretch, though certainly the U.S. makes up a large percentage of subscribers. And then the next 25 or so countries make up the vast majority of the remainder. There are a lot of countries who have just a handful of subscribers. So let's get into talking about feeds in a little bit more detail. For those of you who use FeedBurner, this is going to look familiar. It's a pie chart that represents your subscriber base. So I just took a random podcast feed, and this is, you know, they have a total of about, it looks like about 800 or 900 subscribers here. iTunes is just under 60% of the market, as I mentioned, and I already mentioned this 2-to-1 download to subscriber ratio. That's an important thing to keep in mind, because it means not everyone is listening to or watching your podcast from your feed. Now, that may not be a mistake, that may not be a problem, but it may be something that you need to better educate your listeners, your audience, that they can, in fact, automate the reception of your content. I was sitting down at lunch, and a woman who runs Podcasting News was at my table. It's interesting to me that they are one of the largest drivers of listenership to podcasts other than the podcast's own audience themselves. What's happening here is they are a site that publishes news about podcasts. They also re-syndicate many of your feeds. So this content, every episode that you publish, if you're included in their index, is then represented on a standalone page that is your show with your episodes listed at their site. Now, we have a feature here that what we do is we track where the clicks come from so that we can give you a better sense of where the consumption of your content is originating. And in this case, you've got a website that is taking your feed and putting it on their site, and not just providing a link to your feed, but actually publishing your content at their site. Now, some of you may say, how dare they? They're stealing my content. Well, no, they actually aren't. They're republishing it. This is syndication in its truest form. They're still sending those people over to you. And what's happening is these are people who are not subscribers, but they are maybe searching at Google for something, and because Podcasting News is a popular site, they may have found your episode at Podcasting News. I share this not to say that Podcasting News is the only site you should talk to. It's that there are sites that are driving awareness of your content other than your own site. Now, you may decide you don't want to do that, and you may send Podcasting News a note and say, you know, please stop. But in a lot of cases, this is good, because if what you're trying to do is increase your audience, expand your listenership, you want to make sure that sites like this can easily get your content. And there's actually some tools that we provide to try and make that whole process simpler. We also just measure the number of services that are accessing feeds, right? And those of you that don't use FeedBurner, you can see this activity in the server logs that represent the, every time your feed is accessed. These bots or services are hitting your feed to see if there's any new content. And if there is, they may be indexing it and delivering it to their subscribers. They may be updating their own pages. Podcasting News might be a bot that's just adding your feed content to their site. And these are all opportunities to expand your audience. Now, in this list may also be services that you don't want to do that. There may be someone who's republishing your content and claiming it as their own. You want to make sure you know that that's happening so you can contact them and make them stop. Directories, there's a ton of them. Podfeed.net, podnova.com, Yahoo Podcasts, iTunes is a directory. All of these have lists, often categorized, that allow their end users to find you. Now, some of them facilitate subscription to your content, so once they find you, they can continue to hear from you. Others don't make it as easy to do that. So you as a publisher need to be aware of where your content is listed, and then make sure that you focus on those who, if your goal is to add to your exposure, you want to make sure that they're making it very easy for people who find you to subscribe to your feed. You don't want anyone in the middle of you and your listeners. So I talked a little bit about re-syndicating. Is everyone comfortable with my use of that term and what that means? You can do it yourself. So let's say you have a blog and a podcast as an individual. On your blog, you can list the latest episodes of your podcast along with links to listen to that audio file. Now, I use this particular case. This is an Epic Records artist who's doing this. I'm sure it's not actually Cheyenne doing it. I'm sure it's her label doing it for her. But here's something that one of the reasons I think people are generally confused is they're saying here, download the podcast. Well, you're not actually downloading the podcast. In this case, it's an episode or a track or a single or a voicemail from the road. But in this case, we're using the terminology in somewhat sloppily. And as a result, I think you're contributing, if you do this, you're contributing to some confusion on the part of your audience as to what the podcast actually is. So the podcast, just as long as we're going to get, you know, strunk and white on terminology, the podcast, to my mind, is the feed and the associated content that makes up the feed. Okay? Each episode in the podcast, which is commonly referred to within the RSS feed as an item, is a post, an item, an episode, a track, whatever you want to call it. And then the enclosure is the audio or video file associated with that item. So to the extent that you control how your content gets displayed, I would just ask, in the interest of making the general audience more understanding of what we're doing, that download podcast doesn't actually help. Download episode, download song, download track, would probably be a little bit more, a little bit easier to understand. Now, to accomplish this, whether it's using FeedBurner to use, we have a function called BuzzBoost, which simply turns your feed into one line of JavaScript. You can take that JavaScript and throw it on any web page, and then it auto-refreshes to show the latest items in your feed. That's, interestingly, code you can share with anyone who you want to encourage the re-syndication of your content. So you can give that code or even make it available on your website so that any fans of yours, any listeners of yours who themselves have a site, can just drop that code onto their site, and now they're promoting your content and steering their listeners, their readers, your way. So I point this out primarily to try and think broadly about how you can expose people to your content. This is still working off of your feed, but it's your feed showing up potentially on a different website altogether from your podcast page. And to the extent you want to grow your listenership, your audience, you want to make sure that it's easily findable and viewable. So let's talk about the steps involved in creating a feed. I talked about ListGarden. I tend to think that using a blog application, many of which are free, is the absolute easiest way to create a feed. For those of you that either haven't created a podcast yet or are thinking about creating another one, go to Blogger, go to Typepad, go to WordPress, and in those cases, a blog is synonymous with a feed. Now, once you have that, and you type in the title of the episode, in the body of the post, as long as you link to an MP3 file, and if you run that feed through us, we will auto-convert that media file into an enclosure so that the feed that results from our side will automatically be a podcast feed. So how many of you seen a file? I know that the type is deliberately small, but you've all seen pages that look like that, right? Right? And Firefox gives you the really helpful, the document tree below has no style information associated with it, so the default XML tree is shown. One of the publishers that I've worked with did an analysis of traffic to their RSS feed. And this wasn't a podcast, it was just a text feed. And they determined that 80% of the people, this is a consumer news magazine, 80% of the people that clicked on the subscribe button left their site completely. They thought they'd broken their browser. Right? When I first put a feed up, and my mom reads my blog remarkably, and I, you know, hey, everybody, I got a feed. And she called me, and I don't know what you did wrong, but now my browser doesn't have any pictures in it anymore. That's, when I say that the subscription process is broken, if you point somebody to this, you're not helping them, because they don't know what that is. They're used to web pages having pictures and fonts and links and colors and things laid out in columns, not angle bracket. I mean, that's the Matrix, for Christ's sakes. That's not helpful. So we call this browser-friendly. Other people have different answers for it. It's just creating a style sheet so that when someone looks at the XML document in a browser, they don't see raw XML. Instead, they see what looks like a web page. And in fact, we're going to try and simplify things by giving you links to add this to iTunes or put this feed on my Yahoo or add it to Odeo, so that the subscriber, the potential subscriber, comes here and says, oh, I can have this content delivered to me, so that we can try and address that 2-to-1 ratio disparity that we think needs to be addressed. So iTunes, we've talked about this a little bit. This is what our wizard looks like, where you just say include the iTunes podcasting elements and then pick the category and subcategory. So question came up about enhanced podcasts, right? And so one of the questions is podcast image location. If you're using FeedBurner, you can just type in a URL to an image there, and we will add the proper code so that this will show up. Now, here's where it gets a little tricky. If you fill this box in, that changes this. Okay, which is good, but what it doesn't do is set the cover art for when you're actually listening to the episode on the iPod. Now, if you think about this like a geek, that makes perfect sense, because this is the feed. This is an episode. They're different things. Okay, but if I'm a podcaster, with some exceptions, Those two things ought to be the same thing. Now, the exceptions would be if I'm a podcaster about something that's timely. If it's an audio file, I might include pictures inside the MP3 file that are synced up to what I'm talking about. Now, Apple has a file format, the AAC file format, where you can create chapters inside the audio file and sync up the cover art to those chapters. You can do that inside of QuickTime Pro. Anybody else want to throw out? I'm sure some in the audience know about other tools that can do that. GarageBand will do that. What that requires is that you use the AAC file format instead of MP3, but it is a great way of adding functionality to the podcast itself. That's for audio. If you just want one image in the episode, the easiest way I've found, and I'm happy to take suggestions from the audience about the right way to do it, the easiest way I've found is just in iTunes or whatever your media player is, right-click on the episode before you publish it, select Info, and now you're in the edit screen for the metadata for that MP3 file. And within that, you can specify title, publication date, artist, genre, and cover art, among other things. But that disparity, actually, we get a ton of support requests on that particular issue of, hey, I filled this out. How come you guys broke it and didn't put it on the episode? Well, we didn't break it, but it is confusing. Let me skip ahead. Pinging is an important thing to do because a lot of centralized services, iTunes Music Store is a centralized service, My Yahoo is a centralized service, Google Reader, centralized service, NewsGator. If you ping these services, that is a command to them that you've got new stuff. And they will bump you up to the top of the queue, theoretically. Doesn't always work this way. They'll bump you up to the top of the queue and visit your site next and make sure to crawl your feed and look for any new content. So if you ping iTunes, the iTunes Music Store, if we go back here, will update your episodes. Now, just to make sure we're all talking the same language, the iTunes Music Store is very, very different than the iTunes application. Okay? So what that means is, if you ping iTunes, your episode will show up in the Music Store. But my copy of iTunes, until I actually visit your feed, will know nothing of that new episode. Now, when I subscribe to a podcast in iTunes, it will inherit whatever I've set in my podcast preferences for the polling interval. Now, my polling interval might be once a week, which means if you publish something tomorrow and I checked you today, I'm not going to see your new content for a week, even though the iTunes Music Store will have that episode as soon as you ping them. Okay? Yeah, question.
Podcast where they have chapters. If we want to take advantage of that functionality for iTunes listeners, does that preclude everybody else from being able to get that MP3?
It's not an MP3, it's an AAC file. Okay. So whatever device or media player can play AAC, which I think is the iPod and iTunes, can display your enhanced podcast. Any device or media player that doesn't know what AAC is, which I think is basically everybody else, can't really see it. So what people will do, if you want to put the time and effort into building that enhanced feed, well, that enhanced podcast, is you'll publish two options. You'll publish one for the iPod, and you'll publish one for everybody else. And if our stats are accurate, you'll have basically 2-to-1 for iTunes to everybody else.
What about bandwidth costs for the RSS feed and all these pingings? If someone wants to check you every 15 minutes, are your bandwidth costs going to skyrocket?
Well, if you use us, no. If you don't use us, yes. Because if you use FeedBurner, you don't host your feed anymore. We do. And you're basically gifting us with the wonder that is all the bandwidth associated with your feed. And you don't pay us anything for that. That's free.
But what if I want mywebsite.com/feed, mm-hmm. and then I forward it to FeedBurner or whatever, mm-hmm. that will cost me then?
No, no. The server sees the request, but no data is transferred from your site. You would then immediately redirect them to us. I'll talk about redirection in just a minute. We'll skip ahead here. We've talked about measurement. How many of you know what bits is or know why I threw a slide in here on the plane ride out this morning? Bits is a Microsoft code library originally developed to distribute Windows Update. And it's designed to grab lots of small pieces of a big file so that you're not downloading 100 megabytes at a time, you're downloading a kilobyte at a time, a million times. Okay, so what, Rick? Thanks for sharing. That's a nice little piece of brain cells that will not ever get used. Well, TV Tonic is a video podcatching application that uses bits. IE7, which ships in the next couple of months, has a built-in feed reader and uses bits to handle any enclosures of podcasts. Okay, again, who cares? When we see bits ask for a download, it's like being swarmed by locusts. And so when we tell you how many downloads you've had, you'll be going along at, 10 downloads, 10 downloads, 10 downloads, 14 million downloads, 10, 10, 72 million, 10, 10, 10. And you can imagine that for the podcasters that use FeedBurner, who rely on us for data, rumor has it they're kind of a vocal bunch. And they get vocal about this particular issue, so much so that they feel obligated to share that opinion with anyone that will listen. And in this particular case, I agree with them. If our job is to measure your activity, we need to not count 14 million requests for your file as 14 million downloads, even though it's exceptionally difficult to figure out that that's 14 million similar requests instead of one. So we actually put a change in place today that fixes this on a going forward basis. Unfortunately, for anybody that has these, spikes in their downloads, and there's no way to go back in time and adjust because we don't keep the raw logs of that activity, so we can't go back and reinterpret that. But for those of you, and this affects anybody, not just anybody that uses FeedBurner, if you're looking at your server logs and your web stats package tells you that, look at that, my podcast about Elvis impersonators got downloaded 97 million times last month, probably didn't. Not that you're not really popular, but it probably wasn't downloaded that many times. So this is an important thing when you talk about advertising, right? Understand what the numbers tell you and understand what they don't. Nothing's going to get you in more trouble than telling an advertiser, I have 100 million downloads a month. And then they figure out that you got 27, because those numbers are a little different. Promoting your feed, animated GIFs that show the latest episodes and link to your feed. This is something you can throw in an email signature. It's a good idea for promoting your content, just getting people to see it wherever they're seeing you, right? On your business card, make sure the address to your podcast page is there. On your email signatures, make sure that there's an easy way to see that you've got content that they might be interested in. These are just general ideas. And there's an example of, in a colleague of mine, using that animated GIF to rotate the last five headlines from his feed. And this could be a podcast, for example. Or you could even, Castrol used our ad network to advertise that they had a podcast. Right? They wanted to get, how do you drive rapid adoption of a new podcast? Well, if you've got a little bit of money to spend, you advertise the fact that it exists. Where's the best way to advertise that? In feeds, because those are people who understand subscriptions and they'll subscribe to you. Okay, question about advertising that was asked. What we do today is we will do advertising in the feed and on the site. We don't do any advertising in the audio file itself. Radio Tail, Greg Gallant is walking the floor. I don't know if they have a booth or not. Made an announcement a couple of days ago that they have an ability to splice audio ads into enclosures. Couple other options for doing that. Kiptronic, I think, is a company that works with Libsyn on the hosting side. My personal opinion, the market is awfully young for this right now. I think there's a lot of experimenting going on. We've not made any bets yet on how the in-audio advertising is going to work. We are committed to doing it since that's how we make money, is advertising in feeds. And with 70,000 podcasts running through us, we have a lot of people who we'd like to help make money. So it's something that we are going to do. In the meantime, podcasters who have popular feeds and or popular websites can take advantage of the ad network to have graphical ads running. Question?
Is that an audio ad for Google AdWords? Can you use it in Google AdWords?
No, this is actually using the FeedBurner ad network. We run an ad network for people who use our feed management services. For those, again, I it sounds like I keep talking specifically about FeedBurner. Let me take a step aside. You could just as easily do AdSense for feeds, right? I personally don't think that click-driven advertising in feeds is the way to go. People tend to read feeds to read content, not to keep clicking out of the reader, but that's certainly an option available to you. On the site, you've got any number of options for advertising on the site, right? Whether it's using us or using AdSense or AdBright is another text-based option. Blog ads is an option for those of you who are bloggers, and on and on. That list is actually fairly long. So the point here is to say, when people think about advertising for podcasts, they immediately assume you're talking about an ad in the audio or an ad in the video. But if the 2-to-1 number is right, which is that you've got, you know, or 1-to-1, one subscriber gets a download and then somebody else gets a download, that means they're coming to your site, which means they're seeing your web page, which means if you're advertising on your web page, you can make money there. Every one of your subscribers that sees your feed in a reader that displays HTML, which is pretty much everybody but iTunes, will see an ad, and you can make money there. So think broadly about how to monetize your content, and there are options available to you today. For the in audio advertising, you have some options today. I think you'll see a lot more over the next 6 to 12 months. Okay, briefly, for those of you that already have a feed, if you want, this is primarily if you're interested in using FeedBurner to get the management or ping services or anything else that we manage, WordPress and Typepad have built-in integration so that you just check a box and tell them to start directing feed requests to us. The comment was mentioned from the audience about using something called htaccess, which is a great little tweak you can do to a web server, which basically says, if a request for this file comes in, instead of giving them that file, send them over here. So now you have the ability that every time they ask for that file, you send them over to FeedBurner or some other feed management company. That's true for Libsyn, that's true for us, that's true for anybody else. This is another important one. Time allowing, I'll hop online and show you a web page. How many of you have seen Internet Explorer 7? Okay. I've been working at FeedBurner for almost 2 years. I've been blogging and had a feed now for 5. It feels like I'm in like the bottom of the 8th, and we've been playing the game for a really long time. And God help us, we just got to get to the bottom of the 9th and the game will be over. With Internet Explorer 7 shipping, we're still in batting practice. When that application ships, and it will ship as a priority update to every copy of Windows on the planet that has Windows Update configured, which almost all of them do, within a day, they will all have a new browser. And when they do, they have a built-in feed reader, which also supports podcasting. So our numbers are going to go off the charts. They're also going to be massively reconfigured, because instead of iTunes being 60% of the market, I guarantee you, Internet Explorer 7 will occupy a large percentage, if not a comparable share, to iTunes. The reason for that is that every time Internet Explorer 7 gets to a site that has a feed, and that feed can be a podcast feed, a little button turns orange. And when that button turns orange, that means to the end user, hey, click me, click me. Because when you click them, you see the feed, and you get a big subscribe button. It shows up in the top of the page. Now, Internet Explorer 6 is 80% of the browsing public today. That's hundreds of millions of people around the globe. When they are updated to IE7, they will get a feature that Mac users, Firefox users, Opera users have had for years, But, you know, as cool as we all think we are, we're still only 20% of the market cumulatively. 80% of the browsing public will now have access to feeds. If, and this is a big if, you do this thing right. How many know what I'm talking about when I talk about RSS auto discovery? Okay, just a handful of hands. Auto discovery is the thing, there's one, literally one line of code, and it's a really important line of code in your web page. Okay, so this is back on your site. It's not in the feed, it's not in the MP3 file, it's in the HTML that is your blog or your podcast homepage or your firm's website. And that line of code is in the head section. Right, for those of you that know your HTML, it's in the head section, and it just reads link rel equals alternate type equals RSS, and I'm probably getting the lingo a little bit wrong because I'm doing it from memory. But the important thing is what it's doing is it's telling the browser, I have a feed, and it lives here. And if that one line of code exists in your HTML, Internet Explorer turns orange, and it says, cool, look at me, I got a feed. If you don't have that, even you could have the biggest feed icon in your sidebar and the biggest blinking button that said subscribe, Internet Explorer won't know what to do with you. Yeah?
I'm doing a session tomorrow that's covering some of the same information, and I wrote a generator off of my website where if you put in your feed URL and a title, it will create that line for you. You can put it in your website.
Awesome. Give us the URL. What's the?
Polymorphic.
polymorphicpodcast.com/PME06. Awesome. That's a very, very useful tool. Yeah. polymorphicpodcast.com/PME06. I feel like it's when I'm listening to NPR and they give you the little, you know, this is sponsored by, and then they give you a completely unpronounceable URL. Like, and this is available at nebuchadnezzar.com/
PME
2006.
What I've noticed, even in some places that have auto discovery, but have a separate feed, for example, haven't updated the auto discovery feed to represent their feed burner feed.
Yes.
So TypePad, I think, is an example of this, a previous version, at least anyway.
Yep.
So if in Safari or Firefox it turns orange, I hit that button, I'm not getting.
Well, you may be, right? You may be if you do, where are we? Here, if you are redirecting requests for the auto-generated feed to FeedBurner, then your auto-discovery just needs to be there and needs to point at one or the other. But it's a very good point. I can't tell you the number of times somebody has more than one feed, right? Blogger, by default, now generates three feeds. I think as a publisher, this is not as me as FeedBurner vendor guy, there is no value to your end users to have more than one feed. As far as podcasts are concerned, you really only want to have one. The exception to that rule being if you want an AAC feed and an MP3 feed. I've seen video podcasts where it's, you know, here's the QuickTime feed, here's the Windows Media Player feed, here's the... That makes sense to me, because you would have multiple formats and you might want to support that. But yeah, you want to kind of simplify, you want to give people fewer choices so that you're funneling everybody to the same place ultimately. Any other questions about that? All right, let's just a couple of summary points here on best practices, and then I want to make sure we get to any last questions here in the final few minutes. A lot of these I've already either just said or have reiterated throughout the presentation. Creating one feed helps in a variety of ways. You're not confusing your audience about where to go from multiple places. Making sure your auto discovery links point to the feed that you want people to know about is an important step. Having auto discovery code is critical, as modern browsers depend on it to know about the feed. And it's not just browsers. Bots, indexers that are looking for content, I have heard from commercial publishers time and again, just having a feed included in their auto discovery increases the findability of their content over almost any other SEO specific efforts they've done, search engine optimization. so that their content is being discovered faster as a result of having a feed. And the only reason these downstream services are able to know about the feed is that in the HTML itself is the feed URL. That's a critical one. Redirecting so that all of that the requests for the feed go to the same place is helpful because you're going to get a more complete view of your audience. Ping us, ping whoever you can. We have a centralized service that'll go out and ping people on your behalf, whether you use us or a third-party service, guys like Ping-O-Matic, which is run by the guys that do WordPress. That's pingomatic.com, pingomatic.com. Other questions? Yeah?
You used to have a service that was a fee-based service that allowed you to keep your URL. Is that now replaced by this redirection?
No. So thank you. You had mentioned this in the intro Q&A, and I didn't come back to it. So something that we support is called MyBrand, which allows you to alias a subdomain of yours. So feeds.mydomain.com becomes an alias for feeds.feedburner.com. So when you advertise your FeedBurner URL, you need not publicize our domain. For those of you that are doing this professionally, or commercially in some regard, it's often more brand consistent to have the URL that your feed lives at be the same as the URL where your site lives. And that's something that I think we charge $2 or $3 a month for. Folks, thank you very much. I'm thrilled. Hopefully this was helpful for you.
You've been listening to a presentation from the Podcast and Portable Media Expo. This audio program is brought to you by Gigavox Media, the exclusive audio content partner of the Podcast and Portable Media Expo. For information on future Podcast and Portable Media Expo events, please visit podcastexpo.com.
The post-production audio engineer for this program was Stephen Eng.
My name is Michael Gohagan, and I hope you'll join me next time for more from the Podcast and Portable Media Expo. Here on the Gigavox Media Network.